guys.
It's Approach the Bench on 95BFM.
95BFM is not a lawyer, and nothing in this segment is legal advice or whatever legally.
No mai, hara mai ki, Approach the Bench, the brand new legal segment here on The Wire, where we will speak to lawyers, academics and judges, hopefully, about topical legal issues which have wider implications for society. Today, we're talking about charitable trusts. Now, throughout history, it has been the case that you couldn't qualify to be a charity if you had a political purpose as your main objective. However, a Supreme Court decision in 2014, in the Greenpeace case, got rid of this political purpose doctrine, finding the underlying question for the court is simply whether it is in the public benefit, which can be a tricky question when the group is politically controversial. As a result of this ruling, you may have seen that Greenpeace succeeded earlier this year in being granted charitable status, as protecting the environment is undeniably a public benefit. However, a few weeks later, Family First was also recognised by the Court of Appeal as a charity. Family First campaigns on the importance of the traditional family, however, in doing so, they also hold some controversial views against abortion, LGBTQ rights, and are pro-conversion therapy. I spoke to Dr. Jane Norton from the University of Auckland about these two decisions and whether removing the political purpose doctrine was worth it. Yes, it gives us the Greenpeaces of the world, but also the Family Firsts. So I started by asking her why everyone is so keen on becoming a charity in the first place.
There are tax benefits of being a charity. One of them is not being taxed on income tax. But also there is the kudos of being a charity as well. So this idea that if you're a charity, you're reputable, that there's some sort of oversight happening by the government. So when people donate to them, they know that their money is actually going where the charity says it's going. But also as someone who's donating to a charity, you can then claim back tax on the donations that you've made. So people are more likely to donate to an organisation that's a charity because they know that they can then claim tax back.
And I guess that kind of shows, it's an indication that we as a country sort of support and endorse the views and the work that those charities are doing. But I guess where that gets tricky is when some of these charities hold controversial views and often ones that people can genuinely disagree about in a democracy.
Yeah, and that's quite a new thing really, because, you know, it's been for a very long time that you can generally think, okay, well, something's a charity, so they're doing good work of some sort. So they're feeding the poor, or they're providing some sort of community centre, or they're housing homeless people, or they're doing something that's tangible and good. And it's relatively recently that we now have organisations that are more controversial wanting to be charities.
Now, Dr. Norton was actually cited in the Greenpeace decision, so I asked her about that.
So paragraph 47, they're citing an article of mine where I discuss how getting rid of the political purpose doctrine has potentially created some difficulties for the courts, that in applying the new law around advocacy for causes, there is the potential that the courts have to determine whether the purpose or activity of an organisation is for the public benefit, and this can be particularly difficult where the cause is controversial or the particular viewpoint is contested. And this comes from the fact that in the Greenpeace decision, the Supreme Court said that in order to determine whether advocacy is for the public benefit, you have to look at the ends that are sought by the organisation and whether those ends are for the public benefit. So you could take something like Greenpeace and say protection of the environment. Is having a protected environment or having an environment that is protected from climate change in the public benefit? Well, it's relatively easy to say that it is. Take something like Family First. Is the promotion of the traditional family, which for Family First could entail things like limiting access to abortion, not having gay marriage and so on, the court would have to look at whether that end sought is in the public benefit. And that's quite a difficult line for the court to have to walk.
Right, but something else they also have to weigh up too, though, isn't the possible harms of the actions. And I mean, I'm thinking about with Family First campaigning against things like LGBT rights and being pro-conversion therapy. I mean, something like that is extremely harmful.
Yeah, so that's right. I mean, one thing that kind of strikes me about the Family First decision of the Court of Appeal is they don't talk about the harm at all that might result from Family First advocacy. So the High Court, the court below the Court of Appeal, talked about the detriments that might flow from the advocacy, which could include taking rights away from gay people, and that couldn't be for the public benefit. The Court of Appeal doesn't discuss the detriments, and in fact just emphasises the benefits that can come from promoting the family. And then they just give this very weak warning saying Family First might need to bear in mind whether this is charitable going forward. Now, that's problematic because what does this mean going forward? Are they going to require that the charities regulator keeps monitoring Family First to see whether they're stepping too far out of their purposes? You know, that doesn't seem like a good long-term situation. But also, you know, Family First itself, it's not quite clear what they're being told to do here by the court either. And arguably also this is a bit of overreaching by the court, because the courts aren't supposed to be monitoring the day-to-day activity of a charity. They're simply supposed to be finding that the purposes are charitable and then leaving the charity to sort of govern their own affairs and decide how they're going to realise their purpose. But this warning that the court's giving almost indicates that they might be willing to come to a different decision if Family First steps too far outside its accepted purposes.
This is still only the Court of Appeal as well. So do you think, is there a likelihood that this case would be appealed to the Supreme Court?
Well, I would hope it would, because at the moment, well, I think there are various problems with this decision that it would be great if the Supreme Court could have a look at. But I'm not sure what's happening in this Court of Appeal decision is that the court is saying we're just applying the Supreme Court decision in Greenpeace to the facts of Family First. And so there's a question about whether there is really a legal issue that the Supreme Court needs to decide on that would justify them agreeing to hear the case.
Yeah, and that's tricky. I guess it circles back to that whole thing of it being more of a political, moral issue than maybe a legal one that the courts are prepared to deal with.
Now, although the majority decision did find Family First to have a charitable purpose, judges don't have to agree with each other. And in fact, Justice Gilbert disagreed that Family First's purposes were for the public benefit. He notes that Family First's original name was Family First Lobby, showing their true political intentions.
The dissent in Family First is excellent because it's very short and straight to the point and just says, look, Family First is a lobby group and the majority have sanitised what they actually do, which is 75% of their time is spent advocating for specific causes.
I know that another legal topic that Family First has brought up before, when they were initially denied their charitable status, was that it was a breach of their freedom of expression. Is it a breach of freedom of expression to deny a group charitable status?
So that's a really interesting argument, and it can be traced back to a case from Canada involving a charity called Canada Without Poverty. And I mean, the short answer in my work, I've written that charitable status is a state subsidy, so it's a platform to speak, and it's a privilege and not a right. And so just because you're denied that state subsidy or that platform doesn't mean that you've had your freedom of expression limited. Family First obviously is still free to disseminate their views without charitable status, and they have been doing that for some time. There is a question about freedom of expression that's more indirect, though, which was raised by the intervener in the Family First case, which is whether there is an indirect benefit to wider society by having voices like those of Family First in the public sphere. So Family First obviously offers a certain perspective on the law and on certain issues, and maybe the argument goes that this perspective is needed to have a vital, rigorous democracy, and so there is a benefit from having these voices recognised as charities, because if they're charities then they've got more money and so on and more status to disseminate their views. So that's one argument, but I would very strongly disagree with the suggestion that by denying Family First charitable status, their freedom of expression is unjustifiably limited.
Yeah, I guess it kind of depends on what you see the purpose of those subsidies are. You know, is it to encourage and support those views and that work that we see as a society as being undeniably beneficial? Or is it just to simply increase the number of voices in the conversation, you know?
Yeah. Especially if you have a multitude of polarizing voices in the charitable sphere, like that seems problematic to me. Because, I mean, the purpose of charity law at the end of the day has got to be to provide good stuff for society, good work. And having just a whole lot of polarizing voices dominating that space, it's hard to see that that is beneficial.
Well, I guess the final kind of million-dollar question then, with all of this in mind, do you regret the political purpose doctrine being removed in this way that it's kind of opened the floodgates? It's let in some goods. We've got the green pieces, but we've also got the family firsts.
So that's a good question. So I've always been skeptical about getting rid of the political purpose doctrine since I moved back to New Zealand in 2016. I got back and people were sort of celebrating the Greenpeace decision. And then I sat down and read it and thought, I'm not entirely sure it's as wonderful as people are saying. Of course, there were disadvantages of the political purpose doctrine because it meant that, you know, some worthwhile organisations might be prevented from being charities. But if we do get rid of the doctrine, we need to be really careful about what we're now doing in this space. And I think one of the problems with the Greenpeace decision is it requires the court or the regulator to look at the public benefit of the ends sought by the organisation. So that has forced or can force the decision maker into looking at things like what is the actual substantive benefit of the things that Family First are advocating for. And then you end up with decisions like Family First, where the court is saying, well, of course there is a value, a substantive value in promoting the traditional family. There's one ridiculous passage as well that I wanted to point out to you, where the court says, of course there's value in promoting the traditional family because the majority of families or social groupings in New Zealand are heterosexual. So they go from observing this sociological fact to then making a normative argument for why there is a public benefit to promoting the traditional family, which on that basis you could also say the majority of New Zealand is white, and therefore there's a public benefit in promoting white supremacy. So I think if we're going to get rid of the political purpose doctrine, we need to really think more carefully about how we determine public benefit in the space that avoids these sorts of value judgments about very contentious issues. Yeah. But it is interesting though in the Family First case as well, where the court just sees Greenpeace and Family First as being analogous, and the court draws a false equivalency between protecting the environment and promoting the traditional family. So it sees protecting the environment and promoting the traditional family as one and the same because both are beneficial, but without actually acknowledging that promoting the traditional family comes at the expense of human rights. I think that Greenpeace and Family First can be distinguished. I don't think just because we've accepted Greenpeace, we have to accept Family First. That being said, I can see that there are reasons why we might want to not accept either.
That was Dr. Jane Norton from the University of Auckland Law School talking about charitable trusts. And that was your very first instalment of Approach the Bench.
Court adjourned! Approach the Bench on 95 BFM.